Play Nirvana.
The Cobain 50.
Nirvana.
Kurt Cobain's top 50 albums.
Nirvana.
From listener powered KEXP.
This is the Cobain 50 from listener powered KEXP. I'm Martin Douglas.
And I'm Dusty Henry. This week we're diving into the album Millions of Dead Cops by MDC, which dropped in 1982. And this is MDC's first record, and I think a prime example of the powerful fusion between hardcore punk and politics.
This is a really landmark record as far as being incendiary.
They say you can't judge a book or album by its cover, but I think the title pretty much says it all on this one. Really excited to talk about this record. You'll hear a little bit about Kurt's own run-in with the cops with some ties to MDC. Of course, Reagan era politics, kind of like we did the Clash episode.
Oh man, I don't even that whole Reagan era. I guess it was good for punk music. It gave people something to stand up against. But yeah, well, let's get into this episode, written and produced by Dusty Henry. It's MDC, Millions of Dead Cops.
As a teenager, Kurt Cobain loved to tag things. He'd spray paint phrases and designs over cars and walls all across his hometown of Aberdeen, Washington. One of his favorite tags was the phrase, "God is gay," a line he'd later use with Nirvana and the Nevermind standout, "Stay Away." He wasn't alone either. Kurt was usually accompanied by Buzz Osborne and Matt Dillard, both of the band The Melvins. And usually they got away with it, too.
"And I would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for you meddling kids."
Except for one night in May 1986, the trio of future grunge legends were having a tagging session. Kurt had just spray-painted the words, "Ain't got no whatchamacallit," when they turned a corner and suddenly saw a squad of cop cars. The three split up and try to make a run for it. Osborne recalls hearing screeching tires. They'd got Kurt. Kurt's babyface mugshot became iconic. His hair is still kind of growing out in that awkward phase, and he's holding a placard that reads, "Aberdeen Police Department, May 25th, 1986. Cobain, Kurt D." The D being Donald, by the way. His expression says everything you need to know about how much he doesn't respect authority and how much he doesn't give a f*** that he just got arrested. In Michael Azarod's Nirvana biography, Come As You Are, we learned what Kurt had on his person that night. A guitar pick, a key, a can of beer, a mood ring, and a cassette tape. Not just any tape, though. It was the band MDC, also known as Millions of Dead Cops.
Get for the hate with extras and guns. They do it all for fun. Dead cops, dead cops, dead cops, dead cops. Big bad and blue, they're in the clan too. With Alex is born, we'll put them to the torch. Dead cops, dead cops, dead cops, dead cops.
Getting picked up by the cops while carrying an MDC album might be peak Cobain. The whole situation feels emblematic of the person Kurt was becoming at just 19 years old. As we heard on the Bad Brains episode of this podcast, Buzz Osborne played a pivotal role in Kurt's punk rock education. He passed along a mixtape featuring artists like Black Flag, Flipper, and MDC, all artists who would eventually make it onto Kurt's top 50 albums list. Before this, he was listening to bands like Led Zeppelin and Aerosmith, but with his eyes now open to punk rock, there was no turning back. And really, once you've heard MDC, how do you return to business as usual? There are bands that thrive on subtlety and nuance. And then there's MDC.
"Keep on pimpling, ignorant and loud. You hit a plan on us, you're fooling your crowd. Allegedly to me, I'll put a scene. You ruined another night, keep a bloody from your bright mother. Father, but daddy showed you how. So you're out to kick some extra brains as soon you get the best. You'll get yours so soon, bad happening goon. You'll get yours so soon."
More than 20 different people have played in MDC since the band started in 1979. The only consistent member is vocalist Dave Dichter. Dichter grew up in Long Island, New York, where he was exposed to outsider art from an early age. He spent his teenage years in the late 60s and early 70s watching performances from the Velvet Underground and Louis Armstrong. He'd bask in the artwork of Jackson Pollock and Andy Warhol. He'd also see the riots and protests against the Vietnam War and the response to the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. As Dichter graduated high school, music and the state of the world were on his mind. Initially thinking he'd pursue country and bluegrass music, he enrolled at the University of Texas and moved to Austin. Instead of becoming the next Willie Nelson like he thought he would, Dichter discovered punk rock, which set his life in a totally different direction. Here's Dichter talking with PDX Punk Scene Reviewer from 2015.
I kind of swore myself, and I'm moving to Austin, Texas, and I'm going to get my country, western, bluegrass, kind of funky, you know, Texas swing band going, and watch out world. And that never happened. What I found was the punk rock club, and the people liked my songs with the punks. And all of a sudden, I just sang, well, these people like my songs, and they're telling me I ought to start a band, then I ought to hang out with these people, because the other people don't want to give me the time of day.
Dichter started listening to fundamental groups like the Ramones and the Dead Boys.
I don't need anyone, don't need no mom and dad.
A local club called Raoul's would host Free Music Mondays, where Dichter watched rickety punk bands fumble their way through covers of Wild Thing. And he was totally enamored. Dichter took punk's core ethos to heart, a devil-may-care attitude and speaking truth to power. In 1979, just as he was about to graduate college, the actor and perennial cowboy John Wayne passed away. Dichter recalled everyone around him crying and mourning the loss of the Duke. Dichter's response was a bit different. He'd retort to his peers, "What are you talking about? That guy was a Nazi."
There's right and there's wrong. You gotta do one or the other. You do the one and you're living. You do the other and you may be walking around, but you're dead as a beaver hat.
Now, to set the record straight, John Wayne wasn't an avowed Nazi. But Dichter was speaking up against the hero image that Wayne had cultivated, especially in his films where he'd often take the roles of a cowboy, shooting down and inflicting violence on Native Americans. And outside of his films, Wayne's far-right political perspectives were quoted in a Playboy magazine in 1971, saying, quote, "I believe in white supremacy until the blacks are educated to a point of responsibility." Wayne conveyed other racist sentiments and also used homophobic slurs in that same interview. Still, Dichter's college classmates didn't take kindly to the claim that John Wayne was a Nazi. In a 2003 interview with Rebel Noise, Dichter reflected on the moment on campus after Wayne's death, saying, "If just saying that can piss them off, then I want to piss off the whole country and the whole universe eventually." With the words still sizzling off his tongue, Dichter went home and turned them into a song. He took to the mic at Raoul's, shouted those infamous words, and suddenly, he was forming the Stains.
John Wayne was a Nazi. He liked to play SS. He had a picture of Adolf the Boy stuck in his cowboy vest. Well, he would string up your mama. Well, he would string up your mom. Sure, he would bought you up to the wall. Sure, he would hang you by that ball. He was a Nazi. Not anymore. He was a Nazi. Not even the score.
The Stains were not an immediate success out of Texas. The band recorded a single with John Wayne Was a Nazi, a much slower version than what would eventually appear in MDC's debut. On the B-side was a new song called Born to Die, another politically driven scorcher with a refrain that would eventually become a mantra in punk circles. No war, no KKK, no fascist USA.
No war, no KKK, no fascist USA. No war, no KKK, no fascist USA.
This single found its way into the hands of two key figures of 80s punk. One was Tim Yohannan of influential punk scene Maximum Rock and Roll, who lavishly praised the band. Then there was Jello Biafra of the Dead Kennedys. When he heard the single, he loved it, played it on his radio show, and helped book the band in San Francisco. San Francisco, and more broadly California, would play a key role in not just MDC's career, but in the overall evolution of punk. When the Stains, later renamed MDC, started out in 1979, punk was still a relatively new idea. The Ramones had only released their first self-titled album 3 years prior in 1976. A year later, we'd get the debuts from Sex Pistols, The Clash, By design, punk music was never meant to stay the same. Within just a few years of its existence, artists were eager to blow it up and reimagine what it could sound like and what it could represent. Punk was already loud, brash, and political. Now, it was time to up the volume in all aspects.
If we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly.
On the west coast of the United States, bands began to emerge with the Dead Kennedys and Black Flag, ushering in a new subgenre of punk, hardcore.
I'm about to have a nervous breakdown. My head really hurts. If I don't find a way out of here, I'm gonna go berserkers. I'm crazy and I'm hurt.
Hardcore was faster, tougher, uglier, more radical. While The Clash, Sex Pistols, and Ramones were all signed by major labels, this new mutation of punk emerged from independent labels, often owned and operated by the artists themselves. It was a DIY revolution, and MDC were primed to be a part of it. So they packed up the band and moved to San Francisco. The Stains changed their name to MDC and began to prep their 1982 debut, Millions of Dead Cops.
We don't want you to just jump and buy. We don't want you to just say buy or die. Business is on parade. Corporate scam charade. Drunk for the call. Rich from the soul. Coming for the rich. Promise of a bitch.
Millions of Dead Cops was the first definition of their name, but they've since reinterpreted it as many different things over the years. Multi-death corporations. Millions of damn Christians. Metal Devil Cokes. Magnus Dominus Corpus. Today, they're back to Millions of Dead Cops. The band originally hoped to have their first album released on Radical Records. When that didn't pan out, they decided to release on their own label, Our Radical Records. Meant to sound like Our Radical Records, but it was just the letter R in front of the words Radical Records. Jello Biafra's Alternative Tentacles label helped them distribute the album. Politics had been cemented into punk, but MDC's debut takes it to another level. Dichter's leftist politics were essential to the band's sound, just about as essential as Ron Posner's fast, gritty guitars. The songs are brutally fast, like 30 seconds fast. Like, before you can even soak in the last one you heard, they're moving on to the next furious punk squall, fast.
Your life is lost, now to a cross, get a far call for your God!
I remember getting intimidated and busted at age 13 by the police.
Dichter sings about dismantling a fascist state and the way that you'd play the final round of Supermarket Sweep. But that doesn't mean there isn't room for poignancy. On standout track, I Remember, Dichter opens with a reflection on police brutality.
The police is the clan, it's the mafia, and they're all on the police state, and they're out for me, and soon they're going to be out to get you. So you better keep going if you know it's good for you, and take your stand.
In many ways, Dichter was the anti-John Wayne. Instead of trying to portray America as the winking cowboy savior, he painted an image of oppression and dissatisfaction. Instead of patriotism, he questioned why people should default to giving their allegiance to a country built on spilled blood.
In
Dichter was also vegan. Keeping with the stone-cold ethics of the band, he couldn't help but incorporate factory farming in the album, not to mention world hunger. Now, we should pause for a moment and talk about a stain on the album. On the second song, Dead Cops, America's So Straight, he tries to make a point about how cops target black and queer communities. He does so using the N-word. This wasn't uncommon for white punk bands in the 1980s, but it certainly doesn't validate it. The Dead Kennedys, Patti Smith, even a Beatle, John Lennon, used the N-word. While the clear intent is to speak against racist, co-opting and using the language as a white artist only further perpetuates that problem, even if they're singing as a caricature of a racist. Millions of Dead Cops put MDC on the map of underground punk. Their fiery political message resonated, especially as American punks turned their focus onto a common enemy.
It's morning again in America. Under the leadership of President Reagan, our country is prouder and stronger and better. Why would we ever want to return to where we were less than four short years ago?
Republican President Ronald Reagan won a landslide victory in 1980. His conservative politics and message were antithetical to all that the bands in the punk and hardcore movement stood for, especially an outspoken group like MDC. MDC joined the Rock Against Reagan shows and tour, a collection of punk bands like Dead Kennedys, Cause for Alarm, and one band with a particularly cheeky name, Reagan Youth. Here's Dichter speaking before his performance at the Rock Against Reagan show in 1984 outside the Democratic National Convention in San Francisco.
Unemployment in the youth, white and black and brown, is way too high. How are you supposed to survive without any money? People are stuck. Prisons are doubly overloaded. People are locked down. They're not offering any education, any kind of legal aid sort of help. San Quentin is 20 miles away from here. It's not so pretty in that part of Marin County. American achievements. A man new job, no one's baby. It was a mistake.
MDC kept going through the mid-80s with records like Smoke Signals and Hey Cop, If I Had a Face Like Yours. But the band split up in 1995, citing personal issues. MDC couldn't be kept down long, though. Dichter had moved to Portland, Oregon, and he revived MDC with a new lineup in 2000. To this day, he's continued the project, continually changing the lineup. The band has been especially active since 2016, after the election of President Donald Trump. On a quick turnaround, they put out a new record in 2017 called Mein Trump, albeit with a bit of a country twinge, harking back to Dichter's musical roots.
For you it's the legal Mexicans, for Adolf it was the Jews. Deny its tax loophole, you want the Senate views. Kings and queens go taxless, supported by the pawns.
The album also featured a reworking of their classic Born to Die, retooling the mantra to No Trump, No KKK, No Fascist USA.
No Trump, No KKK, No Fascist USA. No Trump, No KKK, No Fascist USA. No Trump, No KKK, No Fascist USA.
This version of the slogan was used just a year earlier by pop-punk band Green Day during a performance of their song Bang Bang at the American Music Awards. This moment exemplifies the lasting impact of MDC and their politics on punk, seeping into the mainstream. Back in the underground, just last year, Toronto punk band F***ed Up and Ottawa-based First Nations electronic group Hallucination were recorded a cover of John Wayne Was a Nazi. And of course, there was Kurt, the kid who scribbled the band's name in his journals and kept their cassette in his pocket when he was arrested. Like I talked about in our episode on The Clash, Nirvana's music wasn't always political in the way you'd hear MDC be political, but Nirvana maintained a "fuck you" attitude and a version of fascist patriarchal systems. Hardcore punk was in Kurt's DNA. You feel the spirit of MDC in every dress he wore, every bigot he called out, and his willingness to write angry squalls against rapists and creeps. Kurt is just one name in a long litany of artists and activists inspired by MDC and other bands on the hardcore punk movement. The problems Dichter wrote about still persist. The conversations have changed slightly, but the story is largely the same. Punk still persists, and punk will continue to resist.
No war, no KKK, no fascist USA! No fuck to die, I'm forced to fry, my life in a cage, so my rage, I'm misunderstood, I do what I could, I made my try, I'm forced to die!
You just heard Dusty Henry diving deep into the album Millions of Dead Cops by MDC. I feel like there's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, there is. I mean, they leave it all out there. What was your experience with MDC before this?
You know, I've got to admit, I am not like a huge hardcore guy. I think there are a few bands that I swear by. Bad Brains, as we discussed in the last episode. Big Minor Threat fan. There's a few of the SoCal punks like Black Flag. I can dig. I didn't really dive deep past that initial layer. I think I have mostly been of the mindset that if you listen to five or six hardcore punk bands, you've heard them all. That's the famous knock on hardcore music. But I did listen to this album and I thought it was really cool. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that kind of took me aback. I feel as though there's a decent amount of things that are done for shock value on this. But I also feel as though this is really powerful stuff. I mean, you know, like not like power emotionally, but like power, like getting hit in the face.
Yeah.
It was a really, really interesting record to dive into for the very first time.
Yeah. Shock value, I think, is I'm glad you named that, because I think sometimes people with records that are more or less classics at this point, you don't want to like, maybe that feels like a diss, but I think it's pretty true. And I think Dave Dichter basically wanted to shock people. I mean, you say John Wayne was a Nazi, you're going to get a reaction, and like there's some fuel in that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's going a step further from Public Enemy, who we'll cover in the next episode, when they said John Wayne was a racist, which is, you know, the sentiment that I grew up with as a young hip hop fan. But yeah, like John Wayne is a Nazi. That's like taking it to way, way, way past the end zone.
Saying that on a Texas campus is pretty bold.
Yeah.
I mean, that was one thing when I first got into like punk scenes, was how like outspoken and how direct and how blatant things could be. I remember like going to like my first underground shows when I was a teenager and like seeing like people with anti-flag logos, or like someone had like a cross with a big X through it on their tattooed on their leg and stuff. And like, that was pretty like, you know, I grew up in like a good Christian household. So that was a little like, wow, this is a lot. And it almost feels rudimentary in a way, the way like MDC or bands of that era talk about things, is it's so just blunt and basic and like government bad, you know?
Yeah.
But like, sometimes you just got to name it and say it. And I think that's, there wasn't a ton of that. Certainly lots of great protest music before, but this is just so like in your face and direct about it.
Yeah. And I think we take that for granted now because of the advent of social media. It's regular to speak out on injustice, this is the early 1980s, a time when nobody was doing this. Nobody was. The only places you could find people who are discussing police brutality or discussing the police state of the United States of America is through music, is through these radical countercultural groups. That's the interesting thing about music in general, is that it's a document of the time. The document lives on even when the times don't. So it's really fascinating to think about how shocking this must have been when this album was put out in 1981.
Yeah, I mean, and it's all right there in the title. I mean, they're talking about like police brutality, you know, like fascism, and as much as it's of the times, like it's disappointing to think how relevant the topics on this record are. Like that's still the conversation. That's still what we're living in. And the songs are timeless in that way. I don't think everything about these songs are timeless, certainly. And maybe we get into that. I mean, there's a, you know, the language Dave uses on the record, you know, he does use, you know, homophobic slurs. Again, like I said in the piece, not the only band to do that, which is oddly prevalent in a lot of 1980s punk. And, you know, clearly they're going for something to make a caricature or satirize these people they hate, but it does a disservice to what they're trying to say. And kind of undermines the point a lot of the time.
Yeah. And I think as far as the times changing, we have learned to make good satire without having to use that language, without having to use oppressive or offensive language in order to highlight something being oppressive and offensive.
Absolutely. I mean, there's things like, you know, even Kurt would say, or do you go through his diaries or his journals, and, you know, not everything holds up there either. And like we talked about the Bad Brains episode, you have to leave room for growth. But it does make this album a hard listen when you're getting kind of into it, getting kind of pumped up, and then they drop a word and you're like, ah.
Yeah, definitely. Do you hear MDC in Nirvana's music? Do you feel any significant parallels there?
Yeah, I mean, musically, I do feel like they are a bit different, but their songs like, you know, Tourette's on In Utero or some other heavier stuff, where I definitely can hear a lot more of the hardcore punk influence. I think it's a lot of attitude that I get from it. You know, the fact that Kurt had this record in his pocket when he got arrested is just like too perfect. but I do feel like, yeah, Kurt's like anti-authoritarian, just the way he sings and yells, and you feel that. I think it's like Dave Dichter, he was singing with his whole chest and it wasn't holding anything back.
Yeah. Going back to Michael Azarad's Come As You Are, he writes about an early Kurt song. I'm talking from like Kurt's childhood, where Kurt made up a song called Corn on the Cops. It's very funny. I highly recommend you get the new book, The Amplified Come As You Are, and read all about it. While we're talking about Nirvana and MDC, do you know off the top of your head what Nirvana's fastest song is? Do we have any like really quick hardcore rave-ups from Nirvana? I feel like their songs were a little longer than most hardcore punk usually is.
Tourette's is the first one that comes to mind. Again, that sounds like a minute and a half. Mm-hmm. Very Ape to a degree.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of the In Utero stuff. That's one thing I liked about Nirvana. Nirvana wasn't always super fast. I mean, maybe like even songs like Breed, when you get that cool like drum fill, like lead in from Dave, still, there's like, it's slow and deliberate a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. Like you're really going to feel every chord. You're really going to feel every lyric.
Yeah, it's not a sprint.
Yeah.
You know, Nirvana takes their time when they're performing their songs. Even if it is a song like Tourette's, like you still get the feeling of it. It's not like we're running as fast as we can and then it's over.
Yeah. And it's cool to see the difference in effect from both of those things, because I love a lot of fast punk music.
Yeah, same.
It's
here.
Still powerful to slow things down. Take your time, hurry up.
Speaking of taking your time and hurrying up, let's get out of this episode. This piece was produced by Dusty Henry, my co-host. Audio is mixed by Roddy Nickpour. Our podcast manager is Isabel Khalili. And Larry Mizo Jr. is our director of editorial. And as always, I'm Martin Douglas.
And I'm Dusty Henry. We'll see you next week on the Cobain 50 from Listener Powered KEXP, where the music matters.
Millions of dead cops.